Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I'm your host, Julia McLaughlin. My guest today is Patrick Dillon, who is the founder and CEO of Wise Digital Partners. He has started 8 businesses and has been featured in Forbes, The Wall Street Journal, Fast Company, Entrepreneur, TechCrunch, and more. Patrick has worked with national and global brands such as the NFL, Warner Brothers Records, and NBC Universal, as well as thousands of small and mid-sized businesses nationwide throughout the US, Canada, and the UK. Today, we're going to be discussing Patrick's journey of building his agency and what he's learned along the way. So thank you so much for joining us today, Patrick.
You bet. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Sure.
So what would you say really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
I think it's always, it started out as, and I think has continued on to be, you know, just freedom. I think when I started out, you know, working out of college, I was working for a company that I had worked through college with and moved into a full-time, you know, full-time role, full-time W-2 employee role. I just hated it. I lost more sleep at night then, I think, than I do now. And I certainly don't have perfect sleep now, but, you know, just not being in control of your future, your income, your freedom, your flexibility, all that. I think that was certainly the driving force. Both my parents owned businesses. Mm-hmm. My mom owned a graphic design business. My dad owned an accounting firm, you know, and so I saw their ability to, you know, manage their schedules and do what they want, that type of thing. And I certainly wanted that for myself. And I think, you know, today, having owned businesses for 15 years and having done a lot of different types of businesses, I think it's the freedom that you have is certainly hamstrung sometimes by the responsibilities that you have as well. Mm-hmm. But I absolutely rather have that than the alternative.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not the easy route, but it's definitely the most rewarding.
Yep.
So how did you originally get into the digital marketing space?
Yeah, so I'll give you the 60 seconds on the arc of being an entrepreneur. I moved out to California in 2006 to start a business with a friend who was a friend from a former company that we worked with together. Mm-hmm. We started a crowdsourcing fashion company.
Interesting.
And unfortunately, about maybe 14 months into that business model, the economy, you know, took a nosedive. That was 2007, 2008.
Yeah.
And, it was a very challenging time and the business was starting to do well. We were just starting to get stocked into Nordstrom's and Urban Outfitters, big retailers. And it was like all the signs were pointing towards this is going to work. And then all of a sudden the economy just, you know, was gone. I mean, and so we had to change our business model really quickly or just close up shop.
Yeah.
And we turned it into a software company and our first software product became eventually widely used as a contesting solution for big brands to drive traffic to their websites. And once we started figuring out that we could really drive a lot of traffic to websites, most of our clients that really valued that were media companies. So radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, those particular, you know, businesses' websites, we needed to find a solution that would help them monetize that traffic. Mm-hmm. And so our second software product ended up becoming the company, which was my first major software company called the Deal Current Network. We were the first company to private label Groupon and helped about 900 media companies develop competitive programs to Groupon. So a daily deal program, you know, tied into Entercom Radio or Clear Channel or NBC Universal or just zillions of magazines, newspapers, radio stations, TV stations. We were the official partner for NBC Universal owner-operated markets, that type of thing. So
interesting.
That exposed us to a heck of a lot of small businesses too, because they would, you know, we would train NBC's sales team to go out and sell these new digital products. They would bring in their local advertisers in their local market. And then we were a little creative in the contracts that we put together with those partners, in that if they didn't sell other digital products that we did, we could approach those clients. So we began, we ended up with 48,000 small business clients that we were able to go out and market as a partner to, you know, the publisher that brought them in through our solution, and, you know, market them websites and, you know, Facebook marketing and SEO and all this stuff.
Yep.
And so this is about like 10 years ago. And at that time, small businesses across the US were just starting to hear about, you know, Facebook and what social media was all about. And that was like their number one interest. But, you know, we also knew that what was really more important for a small business to think about was the website and the SEO piece.
Yeah.
So I think our driving, you know, our driving north was always SEO, I guess, and the website piece. So that we got like really good at, and then I ended up liking that a lot better. I didn't really like selling publishers. I felt the daily deal space was kind of a fad. There was, you know, that wasn't going to last forever. It was going to modify and change and just become a coupon program, like, you know, coupon programs that existed for 60, 70, 80 years.
Right.
And I really liked working directly with business owners. I felt like it was more like working with guys like my dad, who, you know, you could really make an impact in their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, you stop accepting the 10% a year growth models, and you start realizing you can help a business grow 30, 50, 100%, you know, you develop a friend for life in that business owner. And that was really fun to see that develop. I was leading sales for the agency side of the business, and we eventually sold the software companies and kept the agency and decided to franchise it nationwide. So we ended up with about maybe 12 franchisees across the US. So we were operating with local offices or local office presence in a whole bunch of markets across the US, everywhere from like LA to New York. Mm-hmm. And a lot of places in between. And I eventually ended up becoming I left as the president of the company, the co-founder of the company, and became the number one franchisee of the company, which essentially I then controlled 70% of the company's revenue. So ended up doing kind of like a leverage buyout of the investor group, and then took that business and merged it with another group, which brought exposure to a lot bigger agency life and accounts and talent and all that stuff.
Yep.
So I know that was more than 60 seconds, but it was essentially why is digital is now an agency I own outright. And it was developed from a book of business from the previous agencies, plus a lot of the talent from the previous agencies. So I ended up leaving that merger almost less than a year into the merger, taking back all my best clients, taking back all of our best people, and a lot of the best talent from that other agency ended up leaving and coming to us as well.
Interesting.
Just a lot of things weren't being done, you know, I think correctly there.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So are you guys, did you decide to franchise Wise Digital Partners, or you left that and now Wise Digital Partners is a standalone agency?
Yeah. So the first agency, which spun out of the software company, is called Lightpost Digital. And that was the one that, you know, we sort of franchised. It was a licensee arrangement, but essentially the same thing as a franchise.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'll ever, Wise Digital is not set up that way. And I don't think I'll ever do that again. You know, that was, I think that was a mistake. As I look back, there was that allowed our licensed sales reps to kind of go out and do whatever they wanted. Mm. Because, you know, unlike a W-2 employee, you can't just let them go when they're not being, you know, forthright or honest or overpromising something that we can't possibly deliver on. You know, or they'd go out and with minimal training, they'd go out and say, hey, we can help your business get, you know, a number one on Google. Well, A, that's a meaningless statement. B, you can't say that, you know, and they would say things like that across all the different, you know, products and services that we offered.
Right.
And so I think there wasn't enough of a tight leash on what they could go and do and say.
Yeah.
And I think that got us into, you know, that got us into trouble for sure in some cases. And I don't think I'll ever do that again. Also, I think what I learned was we were in a business model with Lightpost Digital of going out and selling just tons and tons of clients. Like we said, we had like 400 clients on mm-hmm. a very small monthly retainer. So not very many products or services.
Okay.
And I found that model didn't work. You know, you can't really serve a small business for a couple hundred bucks a month very well, because for especially small businesses, not so much medium and large businesses, but small businesses, you spend about half your time explaining what you're doing versus doing the work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that business, we had like, I think we had an average monthly revenue of around 420 bucks a month. And, you know, if you're spending half of your time talking to a client, you've really only got 200 bucks a month left over for doing stuff. You know, you that's like 2 hours of work a month, maybe.
Yeah.
If you're really efficient and you've got good tools in place and good process in place and all that. And so we just, you know, today we don't really have a model like that. And so we don't have to grow pretty fast. And we've been growing 60, 70% a year for 3 years now.
That's awesome.
We don't need to bring on a lot of clients. We need to, you know, in fact, be more choosy about the clients that we bring on. So today we probably, I think I analyzed all the business that we've done in the last 18 months. We've turned away about 60% of the opportunities that come our way. Mm-hmm. And then we close about 60 to 70% of what's left. And so, you know, I don't want a huge team of salespeople right now. We can't really grow any faster than we are right now. This year we'll grow about 90% to 100%.
Okay. So what is a green flag with what you're looking for in a potential client?
Participation. Green flag meaning if we see this is a good fit?
Exactly. Yeah. Like your ideal client you want to work with.
We did a really interesting analysis with the whole team. And keep in mind, my team today with Wise Digital, for the most part in the beginning, were all former team members of mine that had been through either one or two of my past companies.
Okay.
So most of my management staff has been with me, you know, 4 to 7 years.
Nice.
And so we've had a lot of learnings along the way together, which has been really valuable. And I put together an exercise for us that was right before COVID hit. So this was like January 2019. I brought everybody into San Diego. We sat down and we talked about every single one of our clients and if they're a good fit, an okay fit, or a bad fit. And we basically, I put together a whiteboard exercise where we created a big bullseye with like three concentric rings. And then we put everybody on our client roster into the bullseye, meaning if they were in the middle, they're a perfect fit. And we talked about why they were a perfect fit. If they're outside of the bullseye, they weren't even hitting the board. Mm-hmm. You know, why was that? And there was a couple of things that came up. One of the biggest was the client has to participate in the process.
Yes.
As an agency, you know, a lot of times, especially I think with smaller size accounts, like today our average account retainer or fee structure is about $2,500 a month. Mm. You know, the client that like comes to you and says, you know, you guys just do the work. I don't want to talk about it. I don't need a monthly call. Like just do the work and I'll keep paying you. Like, I think that actually sounds very appealing to most, you know, new agency owners, but that's the opposite of what we want. You know, we don't want somebody who isn't going to commit to learning about the process, because that person is the exact person who's going to turn on you when they hear something different from somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about or brings up data or information unrelated to the current scope of services.
Mm-hmm. And they're not getting updated. They're not getting educated on what you're doing along the way to justify what you're charging them as well.
Totally. And they don't care about learning, you know, the data and what the data means and, you know, and coming up with decisions based on actionable insights from that data. They're not a good fit if, you know, if they're going to be that way. I think, you know, in line with that, like when you see a confrontational attitude during the sales process, cut ties and leave. There's no sense in even going any further once you see those initial red flags. And I, you know, for our business, which is really based on, you know, becoming the full service agency, not trying to a la carte services, but hey, we're your partner. We'll help you figure out everything that your business needs to hit the growth goals and outcomes you're looking for. Mm-hmm. And if we can't do it in-house, we'll be honest about it and we'll help you find a partner for it and we'll work with them.
Yeah.
And so because that's our model, we really don't want to work with businesses that don't have aggressive growth goals. As a good example, like one of our best clients right now is an accounting firm that came to us about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. They were operating in one or two San Diego markets, like downtown San Diego and then Cardiff and Encinitas, which is just a little bit north of here. And they really wanted to grow. They were leaving another agency that, you know, hasn't been able to help them figure out things, wasn't proactive, and came to us. And in about 18 months, we took them from two markets to 30 markets. Wow. We quadrupled their company's revenue. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just on a rocket ship now. And those are the type of clients that we want because, you know, as their business quadrupled, and these are pretty big numbers, you know, our fee structure quadrupled as well. And, you know, that's the kind of relationship we want because, you know, they're going to be partners for the next 5-10 plus years. Mm-hmm. You know, when a business comes to us and says, you know, I'm doing $1 million a year and I need some help putting together a better brand and better website, but I don't want any other services. I don't really need that stuff. It's like, well, our time's limited. And, you know, there's 10 other people standing behind you that want all of that stuff. So there's no sense in, you know, investing the time with you. There's lots of other players out there that will take on your project.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're doing them a disservice at the end of the day, if you're not also helping, you know, drive leads for them and you know, take their total digital marketing footprint into play.
Yep. And like a lot of times they'll try and a la carte, like, well, I love your websites, but I don't need the SEO. Well, you can't disentangle the two. Mm-hmm. The research that goes into the sitemap that goes into the copy and design and development and everything is also intertwined into the discipline of SEO as well as the other disciplines, you know, of the agency. And you can't, no, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah. So then it sounds like you're also looking for someone who is open-minded and open to being, you know, coached as well on how you can be benefiting their business.
Yeah. And I think, you know, clients, for sure prospective clients, but for sure also, you know, our actual clients mentioned that time and time again, like, you guys have really helped me understand this. And that's made me a better, you know, business owner, a better customer, a better partner of yours as well.
That's cool.
There's no sense in, you know, having this all behind the curtain. It's if you figure out a way to explain it to the layman, it's actually not that difficult to understand. And then they appreciate it even more because they realize how much work goes into it.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. It's a really good point.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on serving, you know, a specific niche versus being very broad in the number of industries that you are serving? What is your, what is your approach on that?
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of, you know, models of thought around the agency space that you really should, you know, hone in on one niche. And that's the way to start the agency. I don't totally agree with it. I think there's a hybrid model that's better. Keep in mind, Wise Digital became successful very fast and has grown very, very fast over the last couple of years because, you know, we sort of came out of another agency that I owned. So there's a little bit of an unfair advantage in that I started out on day one with 50 clients and a team of really good traffic experts. And, you know, those businesses were already in a good shape as far as their websites and stuff. But right. I never really thought too much about the model of like just going after roofing companies or just going after mortgage companies or law firms or whatever. Because, you know, part of it was I wanted to protect my employees, but I wanted to protect the business better because, you know, my first run at being an entrepreneur almost ended 12 months in, because of an economic cycle that was out of the control of really any business owner. And, you know, I know that's coming back around and today, you know, July 20, 2022, like that's probably going to be coming soon. And, you know, I don't want to be too heavy in one vertical. I want to be more diversified. And so that's one of the big reasons. And the other, you know, the hybrid model is, I think, going after a handful of key verticals is a lot smarter approach.
I think so too.
And so what we've been working on for the last couple of years is developing multiple million-dollar verticals. And so we've kind of got that now in a few different verticals. It's working very well. And, you know, next step is putting strategists into each of those verticals so that, you know, we get more sharing of ideas and we get, you know, more, more teaching to the clients in those verticals. And that's really working now. We're starting to see that. We have three different verticals that are, you know, within the next probably 24 months, we'll be producing over $1 million each in agency revenue. And then there's everything else, you know, and what's interesting about everything else is that eventually those will show us what the next $1 million verticals are going to be.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I think that makes so much sense because, you know, it makes sense to niche into a certain industry to a certain point. You know, like you mentioned, you know, if one industry gets hit, you've got all your eggs in one basket, then you're not in good shape. But then, you know, if you've got those other verticals you can fall back on, you know, you've got a safety net for yourself. So yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And you spend so much time getting to know that industry that it, you know, that is one of definitely the advantages of niching into specific industries as well. So you're able to take that into account too.
One of the other advantages too of having a diversified, you know, group of businesses or industries, we serve about 30 industries right now. You get a lot of ideas that of stuff that's working in other industries. And so when you're stuck, cool. Like for example, mortgages, maybe our number one industry right now. When we get stuck on something or something changes within an industry, like mortgage was just really, really hit with changing interest rates.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the refi market vanished overnight. Most of our mortgage clients, saw somewhere between a 40 and 60% reduction in business as soon as interest rates started changing. Wow. And so many of the different types of loan programs that those businesses offer completely changed. Like some programs are gone. And so we had to adapt, and we had to help, you know, that collective group of clients figure out a different way of moving forward now in a new climate of interest rates. And there was a lot of lessons that we were able to pull from, you know, the accounting space and the legal space and the home services space and some of these other, you know, industries that we serve. We said, you know, hey, we got some ideas. There's something that, you know, we think we're doing in legal that would really help you guys. So we're gonna test out these things that we already know work in this other space.
Yeah.
And you know, you wouldn't have that if you just focused on law firms or just focused on your, you know, senior care facilities or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's a great point. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so I would love to talk about sales now. So we'll pivot a little bit. And so how do you guys now, how are you bringing in leads into your agency and then closing those prospects? What does your sales cycle look like?
Yeah, so fortunately, sales is my discipline. It's what I've been doing my whole life. I started out as I sold knives door to door with Cutco in college.
No,
I was their
way.
Number one rep in the state of Wisconsin all through college. Mm-hmm. Worked with them for a couple of years after school before I moved out here to start my first business. And, you know, so I honed that skill pretty well. I've sold a dozen or so different things. And of course, you know, in my first agency, I was the number one salesperson in the company for, you know, the entire time and developed all the sales processes, programs, you know, demos, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got the metrics around, you know, the initial discovery call and demo and closing and all that stuff down pretty well. Mm-hmm. As far as bringing business in, we've got about six different channels bringing business in or bringing, you know, leads in. So our number one for sure is SEO. SEO brings in, I don't know, maybe 50% of our inbound opportunities.
Okay.
And that comes from a zillion different things, from, you know, the blogging efforts to, you know, the overall structure of the website, directories, some of the PR efforts that, you know, bring stuff in. Appointment setters. So we have like an appointment setting firm that is helping us set, you know, more appointments on our calendar. We've tried that with individual like SDRs. We've tried it with appointment setting partner firms. That's been a really challenging thing to create consistency with.
So is that like when the leads come in, this appointment setting organization will book like the discovery calls for you?
No, actually opposite. So if a lead comes inbound, that goes directly to my sales director myself. Mm. There's no reason for anyone else to talk to it. They'll just screw it up. The appointment setters start before that. So they develop a new funnel of, you know, because they're doing outbound activities, whether it's emailing or cold calling, getting people interested in talking to us and then booking the appointment directly with us or you know, like warm transferring them to us to then take on the conversation.
Gotcha. Okay.
Then ads, you know, ads has been on and off successful in certain verticals, mm-hmm. mostly Google, Google ads. We've done a little bit of social as well, a little bit of LinkedIn, email marketing. So I have teams in a couple different places around the world that, you know, develop lists for me in specific verticals. And then we do outbound email sequence marketing to, you know, to those people. Mm-hmm. That's been moderately successful again in certain spaces in certain in verticals. Awards I think probably have helped a little bit. We've won a lot of awards, you know, maybe 12 or 15 awards about 5 or 6 a year.
Interesting.
Then you know, direct cold calling. Mm-hmm. I don't I don't mind picking up the phone or doing, you know, an email, you know, a solicitation anytime. I mean, that's how I developed the business, how I developed several of my businesses. So if I find, you know, the right opportunity or a competitor that's, you know, not serving its, you know, clientele well, mm-hmm. You know, we'll go pretty hard after that type of stuff. What else? Referrals, probably bring in like 15% of our business.
Okay.
And that's pretty typical. I think in the past it's brought in a little bit more, but now we get so much, you know, through the SEO efforts. I'd say the best quality business and leads come in through SEO. Mm-hmm. Certainly more so than referrals. You know, I think one of the challenges with referrals is that, you know, a referral is generally for the same type of client that's referring you. Mm-hmm. And that kind of means you'll never get bigger and better clients if you're always relying on referrals.
Yeah.
Especially if your agency has a vertical specific focus. You know, mm-hmm. if you just work with lawyers, you're just going to get lawyer referrals.
Yeah. So that was really interesting when you were mentioning the cold calling. So cold calling can definitely be tough. I feel like in this day and age, a lot of people first of all, it's really hard to get past the decision maker. And even if you can get through to the decision maker, even then it can be tough to get them on the phone. So are there any tips that you have, you know, or strategies that you found work really well for A, getting past the gatekeeper to the decision maker, and then, you know, just creating that initial trust with them to build that relationship?
10 years ago, I think you could cold call anyone. Actually, I was pissed off at my franchise sales team because they said you can't cold call, it doesn't work. And I said, bullshit, excuse my French. I'm going to show you. And I actually physically walked into a business and walked out within 60 minutes with a contract.
Wow.
And, you know, came back to my sales team who were nationwide and said, I just, like, you guys are scared about calling. I just physically walked into a business, explained who I was, mm-hmm. and have a signed contract. And here it is with a credit card on it.
That's
I don't
cool.
want to hear any more that this doesn't work.
Yeah.
Now, that's like 10 years ago. I think you could do that because there weren't as many digital agencies as there are today. I mean, I think going into COVID, there was an estimate there's 120,000 digital agencies in the US.
There's a lot.
And I think now because of COVID and because of, you know, people losing their job and thinking they can get into digital so easy and blah, blah, blah. I think there's probably more like 150,000 to 160,000 in the US. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of noise. A lot of idiots, a lot of crooks, a lot of people who don't know anything about what they're trying to sell and are just going to figure it out on their client's dime. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think today for all those reasons, you really got to personalize your approach and really take more of a rifle approach than a shotgun approach. And, you know, and work on connections. I mean, so like if I've been doing this for, you know, 12, 15 years, mm-hmm. There's a pretty good chance I can figure out a connection to somebody if I want to talk to somebody, and it doesn't matter where they are in the country. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, fortunately I can use the clout that I've created, which is, you know, I've started 8 or 10 businesses. I write for Forbes as part of the Forbes councils. You know, we've won all these awards, you know, pick the discipline. We've won at least 1 or 2 awards in it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that can go a long way. But even if you didn't have that, providing a business owner with some sort of relevant information in a very personalized way, and it goes, you know, beyond like plugging their website into, you know, Lighthouse or, you know, PageSpeed or something like that, and providing a silly metric that anyone can give. It's really like diving into, you know, their social media or diving into their website and diving into their SEO or doing a little bit of ranking research and coming up with something that's actually actionable. Mm-hmm. And that'll go a long way, but, you know, it takes a lot more time. And, you know, and your risk is you're going to spend 15, 20 minutes on one outbound email maybe, and it doesn't go anywhere, well, you certainly have to follow up 5 to 7 times.
Yes.
And that's where most, you know, people fall short. Even the salespeople that I've hired and trained and, you know, yelled at because they give up after 2 or 3, like, well, you're not going to make it here.
Yeah, absolutely. The follow-up is everything. Yeah. I mean, I've had prospects before where it's been 2 years of follow-up, you know, and it's just friendly check-ins, and sometimes it just takes that long. But yeah, you just have to make sure you're being diligent with the follow-ups. Obviously you don't want every follow-up to take 2 years.
Yeah. I have had deals that have taken 2.5 years to land though.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's worth it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think you just have to be really diligent of putting all your prospects into your CRM, making sure you're following up, making good notes, and just doing your due diligence.
Yep. Funny, I still don't use a CRM.
How do you track all your prospects?
I work with a lot less prospects. At any given point, I maybe only have 18 to 24 prospects, and I'm constantly cycling them through.
Okay.
So, you know, it's like green, yellow, red.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm signing somebody, I'm then immediately thinking about who's next up. And, you know, I've been able to sign up to 12 accounts a month. And these are, you know, these are sizable accounts, $2,000 to $4,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with a model like that and a single spreadsheet. It drives everyone else crazy. I don't think it works for most people. But I can't, it's like, it's too frustrating for me to use a CRM. And
yeah.
I'll never tell my sales manager knows this. I'll never tell our future sales team this. Like, don't do what Pat does because it doesn't work for anybody else but Pat, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. So you've got a color-coded system, the green, yellow, and then red.
Yep.
Okay. Interesting. So we are, you know, getting close to wrapping this up here, but I'd love to know, just quickly, what is the most common objection you get from prospects when you're trying to close them? And then how do you overcome that objection?
No, I think the most common and fair question and a question that I would want to ask as a business owner in their position as well is what's the expected ROI?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to answer that, right? Because to get true ROI numbers, you need attribution from the clients.
Mm-hmm.
And most clients don't give you that, especially if you're dealing with small businesses, they don't have that.
Yeah.
You know, we deal with like a lot of law firms, for example. There's one law firm of our entire client roster that actually knows how much business we drive for them. And okay. This year we'll drive between, we're sending them an average of 783 leads a month. They're signing 83 new clients and cases a month, and we'll drive $8 to $10 million in new client revenue their way this year.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one client that knows that.
Right.
And so, you know, I talk to prospects about that and I tell them that I can give you an estimate on what we think the ROI is on a per vertical basis. So in your industry, we expect your ROI should be this, but ultimately it's going to come down to you tracking, you know, the lead activity through to new patient value, new client value, new customer value. And if you don't provide that information to us, this relationship is not going to be as profitable as either of us want it to be.
Interesting. Okay.
And I think just being straight up and honest with them, that helps get through that objection.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just giving them that transparency, I think is pretty a great way to just build trust with them.
Yep.
All right. Well, so we are getting ready to wrap up here shortly, but where do you see Wise Digital Partners in 5 years' time?
So unlike most agencies that are working with, you know, the run of the mill, like products and tools and solutions, one thing that we really invested in was developing our own website platform, which comes baked in with a whole bunch of proprietary tools. So it's on review platform, first party analytics tools, a backend solution that pulls in data from 7 different data sources like Google Analytics, Search Console, ranking for SEO, Google Ads, Facebook Ads, LinkedIn Ads. It's called Nest. I've invested $500,000 into this personally now. We have a coexistence agreement on the trademark with Google. We're really all in on this solution. We've got about 60 clients on Nest websites now. It's already starting to win awards as a platform. You know, it's far superior to like the do-it-yourselfers like Squarespace and Wix.
Yeah.
Better performance metrics than WordPress. We're seeing WordPress finally decline after 20 years of, you know, being the most popular platform out there. My CTO and business partner was the solutions architect to the customization engine of one of the biggest video games in the world, and then went on to develop all of e-commerce for the biggest clothing company in the world.
Wow.
That owns like 15 brands. So we've been taking something that, you know, should be enterprise level and building it for small and mid-sized businesses.
Interesting.
So, you know, Wise is the agency is going to do great things, win lots of awards, you know, keep growing, you know, and doubling every single year. But Nest is really where we're focusing a lot of our efforts, mm-hmm. because that's the game changer for our clients.
Yes.
When you have award-winning support and proprietary technology, there's no chance you can be beat.
Absolutely. And then will that be structured as kind of like a SaaS type business?
It is. It is now, and it is becoming more. We're not sure. I'm still undecided whether or not we're going to let other agencies use it, or, you know, ever allow clients to come in and use it on their own, because we've already seen that doesn't work with like Wix and Squarespace and other platforms like that. You know, it's really an SEO first solution as well. And so without a really good understanding of SEO, you're not going to get the full benefit of the platform. Mm-hmm. You know, and then that is a reflection on us, we feel. So, you know, but to your point, you know, what our goal is to, in the next, by 2025 is to have, you know, at least 500 clients on the Nest product, mm-hmm. The full product. So a Nest website with all the backend tools, you know, and we're going to be a quite a big business when that happens.
Yeah. Oh, that's really exciting. So cool. All right. Well, we are now getting ready to move on to the fast five. So we've got five rapid fire questions for you. So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
Yeah. I was thinking about this because you asked this question, you know, before an email. I think the one book that's probably helped me the most is The Hard Thing About Hard Things.
Okay.
It's a very humbling book for, you know, a business owner or a CEO. It really, I think, helped me realize that sometimes, you know, being a business owner, being a CEO sucks. Mm-hmm. You have to do things that no one else is going to be able to do, and it's not fun. But it, you know, it's certainly part of the journey. Mm-hmm. And every CEO goes through it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great recommendation. And then what does your morning routine look like?
So I don't sleep very much most of the time. And so I'm usually up at like 5:30, and I'm on the West Coast. So it's nice to get up early because I got East Coast people and clients and stuff. But I never really figured out how to meditate, but I do have my own form of meditation, which is I get up, I stretch, I make a really nice cup of coffee. I go on the patio. I live in San Diego. Mm-hmm. I go on the patio and have coffee on the patio with the dog, and sort of reflect on my day. And then I typically start having calls. So I'll have a call either with like an employee on the East Coast, mm-hmm. or maybe family in the Midwest or East Coast as well. And then kind of get into the routine of like, I check my emails, and then by 8 a.m. I'm on calls.
Okay. So you just give yourself a little bit of time in the morning to just kind of reflect, center yep. yourself a little bit, and then you get started on your day.
Yep.
Is there a CEO that you follow or study?
I wish I followed more CEOs and spent more time on that. I don't that much. Not to say that I haven't had a lot of mentors and made a ton of mistakes, and I probably could have made less mistakes if I had more mentors or followed more CEOs.
Yeah.
But I think the one that's always made an impact is just learning about Andrew Carnegie. And it's sort of the way I run the agency is I'm just trying to get the smartest people in the room. And the smartest people leading every single department and every single discipline with the agency. Mm-hmm. They're the experts. Anytime a prospect asks me a question about a particular discipline or service within our business, like, I don't want to bullshit you. I don't know the answer to that. I've got somebody who's way smarter than me to answer that.
Yeah.
Let me ask them.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
And what is your favorite online tool?
I think a ranking software. So I've always had so much fun learning about SEO and seeing the results that bring our clients. So we use a tool called SE Ranking, like Moz or any of those. But gosh, I'm in there like every day.
Awesome.
Checking on, success our clients are having.
Yep, perfect. And then last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
Cut ties with bad partners faster.
Great advice.
Yep. And that's business partners and that's also clients.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. When people show you who they are, believe them the first time.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's not going to come back around. It's not going to get fixed. Just let it go. Realize it's not working.
Yeah. Yeah. Great advice. Well, Patrick, it has been a pleasure having you on the podcast. I really appreciate you joining us to talk about your journey and pick your brain a little bit on sales. So thank you so much for joining us today.
You bet. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast and we'll see you next time.